Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're doing something a little different, a bit more targeted. We're not wading through a huge report or a scientific journal. Instead, we're looking through a pinhole, a single weekly news roundup from the hunting and outdoor world. Specifically, the Wild Week in Hunting blog post from the AHLA. Okay, let's unpack this. This whole deep dive is basically a shortcut for you, the listener, to get the pulse of this, well, this vast and really complicated community. Our mission is to use this one snapshot, and it covers everything from legislative fights to insurance to figure out what's really driving the outdoor community right now.
It's a great way to frame it because the source itself is, it's almost dizzyingly diverse. You can tell it's written by an organization that provides resources, especially specialized insurance for hunters and landowners.
Right.
So in one week, you have a major conservation vote that's decided by just a handful of people. At the same time, you have guides worried about liability, and then sadly, a real tragedy in the field. Our goal is to connect all those seemingly random dots for you.
And that underlying context is so important. The organization putting this together isn't just some neutral news feed. They're providing these very specific financial services.
Yeah.
So that commercial frame, that's where we really have to start. When you just look at the blog post, just the structure of it, the thing that keeps coming up, no matter the topic, is liability and money. It just screams that this has gone way beyond a casual pastime.
It's an industry. What's fascinating here is how the organization immediately puts a spotlight on the risks. The risks of just participating in these activities or even just managing the land for them. And the market has responded with these incredibly specific insurance policies.
Yeah, this isn't just, you know, adding hunting onto your standard farm insurance.
Yeah.
These are purpose-built financial tools.
Exactly.
So the source material is really a commercial bulletin that's sort of dressed up as a news roundup. They highlight four main insurance categories, and they make a clear distinction between coverage for the people doing the hunting and for the people who own the land.
Right. On the hunter's side, you've got hunting lease or club insurance, and then guides and outfitters insurance. Those are for organizations, for professionals.
And then for the landowner, they also list the hunting lease insurance, since that covers them too, but then they add something else, vacant land insurance.
Hmm.
And that specific addition, I think, it suggests a huge shift in how people think about liability.
It absolutely does. Let's break down what they actually cover, because that's where you see the commercialization. Hunting lease insurance is for when a club or group is operating on someone else's land. It creates a ton of exposure. If a member gets hurt or if their actions cause damage, well, the club and the landowner are both on the hook.
So that's for active organized use.
Mm.
But the vacant land insurance, that's the one that really gets me. If the land is vacant, why would the risk be high enough to need its own special policy?
Well, this is where you see regulations and just the sheer number of people outdoors starting to collide with property ownership. Vacant land insurance covers your liability for just owning the land, especially from things like, you know, unforeseen hazards or, and this is the big one, trespassers.
Oh.
In a lot of places, even if you put up no trespassing signs, if someone comes onto your empty land and gets hurt, maybe they fall into an old quarry or get snagged on a fence, the landowner can still get sued.
So the fact that these policies even exist implies that the risks are just too big now for general liability to handle.
That is the core of it.
Mm.
It shows that hunting clubs are now basically semi-commercial groups, guides are professionals, and just owning a piece of land exposes you to serious risk. And that whole financial protection mindset, it really frames all the other news we're about to get into. It's not just a hobby. It's a high-stakes, risk-aware business now.
But this does raise an important question. I mean, with this deep focus on complex, specialized liability products, doesn't that suggest that smaller clubs or individuals who can't afford these premiums, that they might be getting priced out of prime land?
That's a very astute point. The need for this kind of financial protection, it usually follows a rise in land values and, frankly, in lawsuits. When the liability gets this high, it creates a barrier to entry. The groups who can pool their money, the organized clubs, the professional outfitters, they can afford the coverage, and that secures them the best access.
Hmm. So it puts pressure on the more traditional casual hunter.
A lot of pressure. It shows the kind of financial leverage you need just to fully participate in the landscape today.
And that commercial reality makes the next item even more interesting. We're shifting from finance to a conservation controversy, one that was settled by a public vote. It really shows where these high-stakes policy decisions get made. And often it's against a backdrop of these deeply held non-financial values.
Yeah, let's turn to item number two in the roundup. It's a very specific and a very charged conservation issue. voters narrowly, and I mean narrowly, rejected an effort to legalize the harvest of white deer.
Okay, so let's get into the cultural context here, because white deer, whether they're true albinos or leucistic, they're rare. They often have this almost mythical status in local communities. They stand out.
They absolutely do. And traditionally, they've often been protected, even if it wasn't official law. So you have this creature that's often revered, sometimes protected by just local sentiment. What happens when a powerful part of the community wants to treat it just like any other biological resource? That's the conflict right there.
And the key detail, the thing we really have to emphasize, is the margin of the vote. This was not a landslide. The effort to legalize the harvest failed by only about 200 votes.
200 votes. In a statewide hearing, that's nothing. It's a statistical tie, basically. That razor-thin margin tells you the community is fundamentally split on this.
Yeah.
This raises an important question. How do you reconcile these two very different ways of thinking? On one hand, you've got the wildlife management argument.
The scientific approach.
Exactly. Which says if a population is healthy, an animal, no matter its color, should be managed like any other to keep the whole herd healthy.
Right. The pragmatic view says, why are we elevating this one animal based on its color? But then you have the other side, the cultural politics, the tradition, the, you know, this simple desire to preserve something rare and beautiful.
Precisely. And this shows those deep ethical divisions inside the hunting community. It's where tradition meets modern science-based management. The debate isn't just about population numbers, it's about shared values. A nearly 50-50 split on something as symbolic as a white deer shows that conservation policy is often just this tense, negotiated settlement between different worldviews.
So whether you're a landowner worried about liability or a conservationist debating herd management, this one weekly post confirms that every decision is high stakes, financially and culturally. And moving from the financial and ethical risks, the roundup then takes this necessary and somber turn. It highlights the immediate physical dangers.
That shift is so important. We just talked about insurance to cover financial liability, but no policy can cover the human cost of an accident. It's a stark reminder that physical vigilance is the one thing you absolutely cannot delegate.
Item number 3 reports on a really devastating turkey hunting incident that ends in tragedy for father and son. And the source uses that tragedy to stress safety, saying it's always important to spread awareness and make sure hunters are keeping safe.
And that detail, even though it's brief, it immediately reminds you of the catastrophic results of human error. It's such a profound counterpoint to the professionalization we were just discussing. You can insure your land and professionalize your club, but safety in the field still comes down to basic moment-to-moment awareness. And when that fails, the consequences are just irreversible.
And it wasn't the only immediate physical threat they highlighted that week. They also included a link about the first bear attack of 2021, and they note that it involves an author, Maggie Hudlow, who is linked to the Meat Eater Media platform.
That pairing gives you the whole spectrum of risk, doesn't it? On one hand, you have human factors, accidents from misidentification, things like that. On the other, you have the completely unpredictable risks from the environment itself, like a sudden wildlife encounter.
And the fact they included the bear attack, which involved a fairly well-known media person, it shows these aren't just small local incidents. They become national news. They serve to reinforce that collective need for everyone to be prepared.
It's the ultimate reality check. You can insure your land, but you still have to be able to manage your equipment safely and be ready for anything. That need for vigilance, whether it's dealing with human error or a wild animal, is just a constant conversation in this community.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because after covering the finance, the politics, the tragic safety stuff, we see how the community invests in its own future. And that's through learning and consuming high-quality content. The media they recommend shows a real culture of self-improvement.
Yeah, that list of recommendations gives you great insight into the learning culture here. They're always looking to upgrade their skills, to find very specialized knowledge, and to watch entertainment that's also, you know, instructional.
Starting with video, the roundup gives a big shout out to the Hunting Public YouTube channel. They call their turkey hunting video awesome and fun. That points directly to peer-to-peer learning. YouTube is the new classroom.
And it shows the standard is really high. The source also highlighted new talent, a recommendation for a really awesome solo hunt, film like a pro. They even suggest this kid should be on the outdoor channel. So it's not enough to just film your hunt anymore. The community values cinematic quality and good technique. They're actively scouting for the next generation of creators.
And then shifting over to the angling world, because the outdoor community is broad, they recommended the Meat Eaters Bent podcast, specifically episode 37, Dropping Rhymes for Flying Muskies.
That title alone, Flying Muskies, signals a real hunger for super specialized, almost esoteric knowledge. The audience doesn't want general fishing tips. They want a deep technical dive on a species like the muskie, which is famously hard to catch. It shows how mature the content market has become.
Right. And then finally, to round it all out, we get practical self-improvement for a critical asset, your dog. The Roundup linked to an article on Outdoor Channel Plus called Starting Your Puppy Right Way, and they added, you know, maybe you could teach an old dog new tricks.
And that is key. Training a hunting dog is a core skill. It's a huge investment of time and effort. That specific article, plus the technical hunting videos and the Niche Fishing podcast, it paints a clear picture. It's a community that is completely dedicated to getting better, to acquiring new skills. They're always trying to learn and professionalize their approach.
So what does this all mean? Our deep dive into just one week's news roundup confirms the incredible complexity of the modern outdoor world. We saw the high-stakes commercial side defined by insurance. We saw the deep political and ethical divide in that white deer vote.
We acknowledged the tragic need for safety awareness, and we explored this rich media landscape that's all about continuous learning.
It all connects.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this wild week shows that today's outdoor enthusiast is a really sophisticated person. They're constantly balancing these ancient traditions with complex modern rules, huge financial risks, and this constant drive for self-improvement and safety. It's a world that is somehow both professionalized and intensely personal.
Where every single outing carries some kind of risk, whether it's liability or something far more serious.
Exactly. The knowledge in these roundups is essential for anyone involved in this space. But let's leave you with one final thought to think about. Considering the very specialized insurance we talked about, hunting lease insurance, guides and outfitters coverage, and the closeness of that white deer vote, how does the rising professionalization and commercialization of just using the land affect what wildlife conservation even means anymore? Is conservation today still primarily a biological need, or is it becoming more of a financial and regulatory game managed by those who can afford the highest liability coverage?